The 5th Annual promises to be all that and then some, with door prizes, giveaways, and a whole lot more. For more information, including vendor info, check us out on the web at whfr.fm. Or give us a call at 313-845-9676. So, where are you going to be October 6th from 10 until 4? That's right, WHFR's 5th Annual Record Show.
Listen to the 1 Plus 1 Show on Sunday nights from 9 until midnight. The 1 Plus 1 Show is hosted by Mrs. Robinson. I'll be bringing you the best in indie rock, indie pop, and music that will just mellow you out. So tune in to the 1 Plus 1 Show every Sunday from 9 until midnight on the station making waves, WHFR.FM.
Variety is pretty hard to find on today's airwaves. How about joining the cause to promote alternative variety? TCM 189 is the staff training course for HFCC's own WHFR, a station devoted to new, local, and unique artists. The course provides students with essential station procedures as well as equipment knowledge and basic performance skills. The class can be taken for credit or under the Center for Lifelong Learning. For more information, contact Susan McGraw, WHFR's general manager, at 313-845-9842.
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford Community College. Henry Ford Community College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford Community College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford Community College. For more information on admittance and financial aid and class schedules, call the Henry Ford Community College toll-free number at 1-800-585-HFCC. Again, that's 1-800-585-HFCC.
Hi, this is Jill Jack, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn, independent radio, broadcasting since 1985.
WHFR Dearborn. This is a pre-recorded show. The opinions expressed on Dearborn Heights News and Views are not necessarily those of anyone at Henry Ford Community College.
Listening to the Heights News and Views, part of this station's monthly talk show format on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. on WHFR, making waves on 89.3 FM from the student radio station broadcasting from the Henry Ford Community College located in Dearborn, Michigan.
That's right. This is Dearborn Heights News and Views, the monthly forum show covering significant news and events from the city of Dearborn Heights. You just heard Ned Apigian. I'm Dennis Reimars, and we're going to talk today. We had two wonderful interviews with the candidates for the open city council seat in Dearborn Heights. They will be on the November 6th general election ballot. That is Joe Kaczynski and Lisa Ferens. And we talked to Joe first, and this is what he had to say. Joe, thank you so much for being with us here today.
You're welcome.
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you on two scores for the opportunity to be here. And for your offer of congratulations on my appointment to the vacancy on the Dearborn Heights City Council.
Well, you're very welcome. Yeah, I think congratulations are in order, although this is not necessarily new to you. You've done this before, haven't you?
I am I have done this before. I am the newest council member with the most experience.
Well, and if I remember correctly, the first time around would have been back in 1978.
Yes.
And you held that position. You were on city council for 21 years, and the last four of which were as council chair. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's correct. There was a span of 21 years of service from 1978 to 1999, and four of those years were as a council chairman, 96 through 99. I must reveal to you that in the interim, between that span of time, there was a break in service, and that occurred once in 1980 when, correction, not in 1980, but 1985, when I relinquished my opportunity to continue serving as a council member to run for mayor. In that race, there were three people, myself, a retired police captain, and Lyle Van Houten. To make a long story short, Lyle Van Houten was the victor in November. Interesting enough, he was not first in the primary election. The retired police officer was first, and I came third, Lyle being second. After the election in 1985, November, I had the opportunity to serve Lyle Van Houten's council on expired term. So you might be interested in this history. For the second time in my lifetime, I am following a Van Houten as filling a vacancy. First time for the honorable mayor who served as a council member for a prolonged period of time, Lyle Van Houten. I served his unexpired term, and now I have been appointed to the vacancy to serve Margie Van Houten's unexpired term, who has been elevated to the Circuit Court by the Third Circuit Court by the Honorable Rick Snyder,
the governor of Michigan.
Yes.
Well, of course, you know, you're sitting right next to Netta Piggian, who co-hosts the show with me, and I know that you'll be sitting together soon, every 2 weeks, in council chambers. But Ned.
Every week.
Every week if there's special special meetings. Now, Ned, you're relatively new to council, and in fact, you know, compared to Mr. Kaczynski's previous stay on council, it seems not intimidating, but that's quite a bit of an experience. I have to ask you now.
That's why we picked it.
Yeah? Do you want to go into that process? Well, I guess what I'm asking is... We'll get into the actual second time around on council soon. But what was the spark or the catalyst for you back in the 70s to take, I don't know, take a stab at it? Because, I mean, let's face it, there's nothing guaranteed. But what caused you to run for city council?
There were two influential people in my lifetime who said, Joe, why don't you give some consideration to serving the general public in Dearborn Heights as a council member. That happened to be my young brother, and there was another person whom very few people knew at that time that we had a relationship sufficient enough to this man to also recommend that I give consideration to the council, and he happened to be Richard Young, also an attorney.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
The two attorneys apparently talked and come to a conclusion that my background, my demeanor, and my manner of wanting to help other people would be a valuable asset to serving on the Dearborn Heights City Council, and there I was. You might be interested. My first attempt occurred in 1973. I ran in a collection of nominees, numbering 12. Where six seats were available, and I landed sixth in the primary, but didn't garner enough strength to make the general election. So I came back the very next opportunity in 1975 and was successful to get my first term.
Joe, you must have been involved in other issues in the city. That's why your friends asked you to consider running for council. I don't think, you know, you didn't start out that way.
They didn't say, hey, you know what, your picture would look good up there, so why don't you run? Obviously you had
you must have been doing something else.
Well, when I first got the interest to serve the citizens of Dearborn Heights, there came an appointment to the Zoning Board of Appeals in 1973, and I served on that board until the full term came in from 1978 and forward. I became the vice chairman of the Zoning Board of Appeals, which is, in a sense, an accomplishment, and demonstrated that I had some success in doing some responsible work as a Zoning Board member. So that was really the start. That's where it really began. And then I continued as a council member with full term from the election of November 1977 and forward.
I've talked to several people that have were elected to office, various office, one of them being state representative. We've talked to George Duraney and actually some of the other people that, again, have come through. We've interviewed quite a people on the new WHFR Journal and other shows. And most, if not all, say that there's a learning curve, that sometimes it takes them, one of the state reps, said it took them an entire term to really kind of figure things out, that there were not just the normal procedures and formalities, but some of the, the behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on to get, I hate to say get deals done, but certain things pass because enough people support it, and there's different ways to get that support. I wondered, your first time around, if there was a learning curve for you.
I might help you with the language that you wanted to use.
Please.
The political implications of making decisions. Those kinds of influences should stay by the door as you enter the council chambers. There are no friendships to be had in serving the general public. You come prepared in reading and understanding the materials that are furnished to you, and you make decisions based on the material that is used in the discussion that comes after the proposal is on the table. When we sit there in numbering seven, we all come from different walks of life, and we all have to have, I emphasize, we have to have different kinds of conclusions to what we read and what we would propose as the best result for the common good. To answer your question, is there a learning term? Of course. Just as a youngster starts in kindergarten and first grade, they don't have the answers. They don't have all the answers, nor does a council member elected have all the answers. But we get elected on the premise that we have the ability to learn those things that have to be learned and then go forward with good judgment and common sense.
Okay. And both of you are here. I wonder, I don't think this is possible for citizens, residents to take into consideration the teamwork that's really required. I mean, you said you go in there without preconceptions, you learn the material, and then you make decisions based on the discussion that follows. But this is not an every man for himself type situation. There's more kind of a synergy, if you will, that goes on where together you are, the whole is greater than the individual parts.
And that's correct. It's not every man for himself. If that was the case, we would need to shut the cameras that are recording these meetings. If you're playing up to the camera, you're not doing the justice to the community. You've got to come with decisions hard and fast as the agenda items are called for consideration by the chairman.
Now let's talk a little bit about this most recent, your most recent stay or election to the city council. There was something...
Selection.
Well, he was elected by
the council.
Council. He had the required four votes. There was some confusion during the meeting itself. I know that Councilwoman Janet Badalow brought up a legal opinion from 1995. And then you and I, we spoke after the actual meeting, and you had you handed me rules of order, Robert's Rules of Order, and we talked a little bit about this. Is there a way for you to maybe clear up the discrepancies? Because there's a few people that I know that I've been contacted by after the fact and said, hey, what exactly happened here, and was it legitimate?
It was legitimate. The appointment was legitimate. I go back to the April 24th decision, wherein there were five members present, and the council was not a full complement of seven. So I argued the point. I'd gone through the first printing of the charter, second printing of the charter, wrote a letter addressed to the chairman, which ultimately was reviewed by Councillor Gary Miotke, and he was kind enough to write back and point out where my reasoning was defective to the point that I accepted his opinion. He is a licensed attorney, and if he didn't give the appropriate opinion, he has some answers to be brought to the table. My answer to the controversy, if one might use that with regard to the appointment just most recently, is that if the council members are fully apprised of what the charter dictates, what the resolutions that address this issue have to say, ordinances and regulations, what the policy and procedures manual has to say about it, and ultimately, if none of that answers the question, the council subscribes to Robert's Rules of Orders. It's more procedural than pronouncing a dictate of what has to be done. But Robert's Rules of Orders indeed says that the vacancy shall be filled within 15 days of it becoming vacant, and that didn't happen. So I stand on the merit of the council agreeing to looking at Robert's Rules of Orders as a source of information, and indeed it says that the vacancy shall be filled. In addition to that, the charter says that we are a board members numbering seven. How much longer did you want to conduct the affairs of the city from the financial responsibilities that the council has beyond the point of making the appointment? I think that the citizens were being shorthanded with regard to the responsibilities of seven members making the decision and not six.
Tom Berry said as much. I talked to him after the meeting, and he had actually, it was his change of vote that was the fourth vote that was required, that you needed to for the election. And he had said that he had backed a gentleman, and he nominated him and backed him, and when he had taken himself out of the equation, he looked at the situation, said it's time to move forward. He said this has gone on. He said the citizens of Dearborn Heights need their seven council members. And he felt, based on your experience, as Ned had said, that's what changed his vote. So there are other people involved in this, and you will be subject to a general election. So this is very interim. And then on November 6th, you'll be back on the ballot, correct?
I will be back. I will be on the November 6th ballot, yes, to hopefully fill the unexpired term that goes through December of 2013.
2013, and then you'll be campaigning again, should you decide to stay, correct?
Correct. And I would quickly say that those kinds of decisions with regard to campaigning in November of 2013, mm-hmm. or before that, has a consideration of various factors: health, family situation, who all is running, and then a determination as to whether I should go forward based on the findings of those considerations that I enumerated.
And I think those considerations are reasonable, very much so.
Yes.
I'm very curious what the catalyst this time around. We talked a little bit about, people that thought you were qualified back in the 70s said, and again, you had an understanding of certain issues, and throughout the learning curve, obviously something worked if you stayed in council for as long as you did. What happened this time around that you took notice and said, this is something I want to be a part of?
Well, I retired from my regular work responsibilities in the pharmaceutical industry in 1996. I continued to serve through 1999, and at that point, there was a need for me to want to be actively involved in some kind of issue or some kind of daily responsibility, if not daily and weekly, or if not weekly, certainly monthly. Because I'm of the opinion that if you keep the stuff, the gray matter above your shoulders active, everything else falls into place. So I've never ventured away from the responsibility of serving the community. I still serve.
You're on the pension board
yes,
now.
Yes, I still serve on the General Government Pension Board. and have served on that board since 1984. And since the year 2000, I've been the chairman of that board. So I have had a public service commitment, a life commitment to the city of Dearborn Heights. And go back to the question. People are asking, why are you coming back? I have the time, the energy, the mental capacity to offer something by way of my experience. Experience gives you an opportunity to look at single issues from various facets, and I think that's a great plus that the citizens of Dearborn Heights can benefit from my presence.
So, and actually, because of the Honorable Van Outen being appointed to the third district bench, or I'm sorry, third circuit bench, that gave you an opportunity.
Of course.
One that you might not otherwise have had.
Absolutely. It sure was an opportunity.
Yeah. This is Dearborn Heights News and Views. I'm Dennis Reimers with Netta Piggian, and we're speaking with Joe Kaczynski, who is the newest member of Dearborn Heights City Council, however short-lived, because that will be until the upcoming election. And then you'll, again, as we just said, have to start this process again. Do you have... It's probably a little bit... Well, actually, this is probably about right, because the absentee ballots go out very soon, don't they?
Absentee ballots are probably going out an approximation, in my judgment, 1 month before November 6th. So we're just weeks away from the potential of the absentee ballots falling into the mailbox for those who take that route of voting.
And that is a really big deal, is it not?
Absolutely. In my opinion, the...
The biggest deal.
It is the biggest, I agree.
Why is that?
Because the people who get absentee ballots, 90% of them vote. Everybody doesn't vote on the... Even though they ask for an absentee ballot, everybody doesn't turn them in.
So in other words, this show, obviously it's pre-recorded, but it will be out and people will hear it, and it will be as a podcast in plenty of time before that. So I think that's significant. Had you done something, I don't know, whatever, print, TV, radio, let's say in the middle of October, thinking your timing's great, that you may have missed a huge segment of the voters, correct?
If I were to just get started, I would have missed the most important segment of the population, the population that votes.
Okay. Two things. When you told me before, you know, when we were off the air, you said that before the actual election, meaning the one in the last meeting where you had the required four votes, you've been to a few meetings, and you've been paying attention. Obviously, you knew some of the things that were going on. Was there anything in particular that kind of jumped out at you, and you said, "Well, I really would like something to say about that"?
Giving some thought in that regard, on April 24th, if that appointment did occur, we were still in budget deliberations. And yes, I would have liked to have been a part of that simply because we are in deficit. I have never served the community when we were in deficit financial state, and there might have been some options that I would have offered for consideration by the members of the council, but that's done. We now have to live as members of the board with the pronounced responsibility of managing the budget. A budget that was deliberated and a budget that's been approved by the council now has to be scrutinized very carefully so that we can address the deficit as quickly as possible. With that said, I'm coming to understand that we're going to continue to add to that deficit even this year. So I'll be very closely in line with the responsibility of analyzing each piece of information that comes onto my packet to determine whether everything is according to the book.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Why don't you tell us something about yourself, autobiographical? Autobiographical.
There we go.
Right. You want to know something about...
Something nobody knows.
Before you went on the council, you were alive and well and...
And then fill in the blank.
Okay.
So people know.
We can give you that, Ned. I'm a native of Detroit, have lived in the metropolitan area all my life except the 2 years of service, 1952 to 1954, in which I served in the military. The marital status is excellent. My wife and I will celebrate 57 years this coming November 19th.
Awesome.
We are parents.
And you can't find too many veterans nowadays.
Exactly. And we are parents of four adult children, all standing on their own, all working, and we are very proud of what they have accomplished in their life. I also have four grandchildren. I love all four equally, and every time they come around, they get rewarded for just being here. My work career started in 1955. My professional work career started in,
What's your educational background?
I have a Bachelor of Science degree in marketing.
There you go.
And I had 72 semester hours of post-baccalaureate study to just keep abreast of the changing situations and circumstances in the profession that I proceeded to represent.
Which was?
Which was a manufacturer's representative in the pharmaceutical industry.
I see.
Dealing strictly with professional people, and it's a very rigidly controlled industry that you have to conform to. You can't give your own opinions or ideas in that industry. You have to conform to the requirements of the FDA and the responsibilities that physicians and nursing homes put upon you to tell the truth.
What's your undergraduate degree in, and where did you go to school?
I'm a graduate from the University of Detroit.
Yeah.
And I have a Bachelor of Science degree in marketing.
Okay. You said that the industry's changed a little bit since you retired in 1995, but my question is, has council changed? Now, it's a little bit early. You haven't had your first meeting, but from what you've seen and from the meetings that you've attended, the process is similar, yes?
The process is similar. The principal change is personalities. You have different people seated there, and they come from different walks of life. I cannot say that they carry their responsibility differently, because what I see is a commitment to serve the community, but there are times when a issue is put on the table, a suggestion or recommendation, which I presume to be a good suggestion, doesn't get followed sufficiently. In other words, if I put something on a table and it just stays there without any comment by a fellow council member, that suggestion falls by the wayside without getting any additional debate and discussion. It's not embellished. It's not expanded to determine whether that suggestion is the best one coming forward. And I will say this: if anybody, any council member, has a idea that is, in my judgment, determined to be the best idea, you have support there now.
This is awesome, Joe. Last question. What color is blue? Yes or no? Okay, I'm kidding. honestly, though, is there anything that you want to tell people? You said your words after the last meeting, after you were elected, were that you are going to go forward. I'll paraphrase here: forward with full disclosure. That was a full disclosure of the issues, I think you said.
Yes, I my guideposts in life are trustworthiness, integrity. And I will give my best effort to give you disclosure so that all of the facets of an issue are understood by all.
By all. Joe Kaczynski, newest member of Dearborn Heights City Council, thank you so much for joining us. And we hope to talk to you again at some point in the very near future.
And thank you from me, too.
My pleasure. I look forward to a second time around. Right. Not only in this interviewing environment, but also the second time around to serve the community to the best of my ability.
Well, and I know that there will be a lot of people watching, and for sure it'll be in the paper, and we're going to do what we can on Dearborn Heights News and Views to make sure that people are up to date on all the everything going on.
My thanks and sincere appreciation.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, Ned. That was very interesting conversation with Mr. Kaczynski. What did you learn? I mean, because I know you're on council, so you know a lot of the stuff that most people won't.
Well,
what did you learn from him?
He, on one occasion, came, you know, introduced himself. We interviewed all the candidates, that people that were interested, and I remember him saying he was a graduate of the University of Detroit.
Okay.
I knew that he was a veteran. I had slipped my mind whether it was a World War II veteran or a Korean veteran. I think it's more important to give people's background to start off with his political career, and when it, you know, is not the beginning of life for most of us. Maybe
right.
It is for some. I did not know that he had done, when mayor, when Mr. Van Houten became mayor, that left a vacancy. So essentially he did then what he's doing now. He was appointed to fill the unexpired term of Mr. Van Houten. I didn't know that. Not that it makes a difference.
Well, that's kind of cool. It's probably the first and only, well, the only time in history that somebody has followed the same family member in two different occasions.
I wasn't thinking of that. I didn't know that he had... Yeah, that is interesting. I didn't know that he had done that before. And usually, actually, the same thing happened to me. You run... I was not appointed. He's going to have to run for the unexpired term of Marge Van Houten, which would be for 13 months. So when he gets... If he gets elected in November,
mm-hmm.
he stays on the council until December of the following year.
Okay.
If he doesn't, in his case, in the case of Lisa Perrins, she would come on the council right away in November as well.
So he's interim, truly, until the general election November 6th. Whoever wins that particular election, and it's between Lisa Ferens, who we'll also get an opportunity to speak with today, and Joe Kaczynski. Whoever wins immediately takes over.
Essentially, he's been appointed for 6 or 8 weeks or 7 weeks.
Right.
How many weeks there are there? How many weeks left in September? 3 weeks?
Sure.
Last week was the fourth week he actually stood in on a study session.
Sure.
There's 4 weeks, and that's 8 and 1, 9. So he's been appointed for a 9-week period, of which if he wins the election in November, it is not a primary, of course, he will serve for about 14 months.
Okay.
13 and a half months or 14 months. And then, as he pointed out to you, that it's not clear whether he will run for the 4-year term. That's the question you asked.
Well, I did, and his answer was based on a lot of variables.
Well, that's an answer question I was interested in hearing, but because that is important to other people who are planning to run 2 years from now.
Right.
They may not, or they may, depending on what he does.
So
that's what I learned.
When you first came aboard onto Dearborn Heights City Council, you also took over a term. It wasn't the full term, correct?
Exactly. It was actually the same amount of time. I think about 14 months.
How did that affect you? Was there a difference in not starting from the very beginning, not starting with everybody else?
Well, it only affects you as much as you understand what's going on. So, I mean, I'm always learning things.
Right.
It's not like becoming a state rep. There's not a orientation period. And a lot of the people that have been there for 10 or 15 years don't exactly call you up and say, guess what, this is what's going to happen. And I give you some insight into this problem. You're usually confronted with it as you see it. And it's a little bit of a myth. Most people think that we're all talking among ourselves beforehand, and we're putting on a stage show. When you see the televised show, that's not exactly true. We have this Michigan open meeting requirement. Even if I had a party in my backyard where I invited a couple of people over for hot dogs one time, it became an issue as to what we would talk about when we were there. So there isn't a lot of discussion among ourselves beforehand. Pretty much what you see is what you get. When you when you sense a little animosity between people, and that a lot of it happens, hopefully it never concerns me, it's because they're getting at each other right then and there.
But if you do have a question, though, people are helpful, I'm sure. You know,
if I had a specific question, sometimes I do.
Sure.
I would ask. But generally, you go to a closed source session and you don't even know pertains to a lawsuit. You have no idea what that lawsuit's about. That's happened a couple of times. None of us knew what the lawsuits were about. We go there and we hear about it.
What's up?
So, I mean, people that get elected to state rep, they have a whole orientation period in Lansing, which is helpful. Because as you're coming in as an odd person with other people that have been there, and it's different, you know.
Well, it seems like it's extremely different from anything I've experienced. This is Dearborn Heights News and Views with Netta Piggin and Dennis Reimers, and we also had the opportunity, this is all in the name of being fair and balanced, we have an opportunity to talk to Lisa Ferens, who will be the candidate in the general election November 6th as well. And this is what she had to say.
And there's only two candidates, of course.
That's right. And this was Lisa Ferens on an earlier interview. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us here in the studio. We appreciate you coming in.
Good evening, Dennis.
Ned, I think you wanted to get the ball rolling.
Well, first I want to thank her for coming, too. Can't tell you the number of people I've interviewed and half of them never showed up.
I'm sorry, I have to... Why is that, Ned?
You never know. They get caught up in traffic. Anyway.
It's probably best I called you then.
Right.
Right, Lisa?
She showed up without us having to worry which door she was at.
She was early. Excellent. Right. Excellent.
Anyway, life always begins in the beginning, and I think I only know Lisa from a very attractive lady sitting in the audience when we have council meetings, if she attends. Let's find out something about her background.
Well, you don't waste any time, do you?
Where you were born, where you were raised, whether it was here or not. So give us your personal background story.
Happily. I was born and raised in the Des Moines, Missouri area. I was actually born in Des Moines, Iowa. My parents moved just a few hours to the Maryville, Missouri area, where my father retired from Northwest Missouri State University. And my entire family has lived there for many generations. My mother and father are divorced, and with my mother's subsequent marriage, we moved north when I was a child to Ohio, where I graduated from high school and completed my bachelor's degree at Walsh University, which is a Jesuit university located in North Canton. I then immediately began work for Detroit Diesel Corporation, literally 2 days after graduating from college in 1990.
In Detroit?
No, actually, when it was owned by Roger Penske in 1988, he moved their worldwide parts distribution center to Canton, Ohio. And I started there, again, 2 days after college, and had some wonderful opportunities. I actually worked there for a year and a half, and then I moved to the border of Mexico and lived there for nearly a year, opening a break bulk warehouse. And then when it was time to come back, they said, hey, how would you like to move to Detroit and get a promotion? And that was my journey to Detroit in 1992.
That was a no-brainer, huh?
That's right.
A promotion? Where is this Detroit?
Well, actually, being so
somewhere
young,
near
it
Ludington.
Was quite, being young, it was quite scary because you're moving to Detroit all alone. You really don't know anyone. And you've heard horrible things about Detroit.
True. Yes.
And, you know, after living here for a while, I would tell my friends in Ohio, you know, I can get to 5 state parks within an hour. They have great shopping. They have the DIA, which I adore and have been a long-term member of. And I have some friends now that just literally love to come to Detroit on vacation.
And you live in Lisa's subdivision, Lisa Hicks Clayton subdivision.
Lisa Hicks Clayton, who is a current member of council, and I do live in the same subdivision. And we both actually serve on the subdivision board. It's Gulfview Manor Civic Association.
There you go. The best subdivision association in the city, I think.
Well, and it also has the distinction of actually being the oldest subdivision association in the entire state and one of the oldest in the country, having been established in 1958-59 when the subdivision went up.
Wow. See, we just learned something important. Well, I know one thing. My association not number one. Hopefully it would be number two.
Well, it's really good to have a strong subdivision, because we work with Mark Perinello from the police department, and we've created a very good neighborhood watch group. We've been trained by the police department and 911 dispatch on how to call in anything suspicious, and it really helps keep the community solid.
Well, you know what? You just brought us to the next question, which should be interesting to your involvement in things that have nothing to do with the council. Why don't you tell us about that? I think you just started to.
Okay.
It's an important phase that, you know, I couldn't do a thing like that.
Yeah. I think that I have to say that that's probably part of my Jesuit education, in that, you know, one of the questions that you're always taught is, if you are part of a community and you benefit from life in that community, aren't you obligated to give something back? That's a philosophical question.
I went to a Jesuit university. I don't remember that. All I remember was...
You were gone that day. You skipped.
Thomistic philosophy I had to suffer through.
Please finish, Lisa.
I didn't suffer. I loved it. So as a result, I've always been active in things within the community. When I lived in Ohio, I was a member of a group called the Pilot Club, which has nothing to do with flying, but is similar to what you would consider the Rotary here. Mm. And we actually were the second group in the nation that started putting on very large-scale theatrical plays using children. In fact, all the children who were involved had either a mental or a physical disability. Mm. So it was a great opportunity to focus on their abilities rather than their disabilities. And that was one of the first large-scale community service groups that I was involved in. Moving to Detroit, both with Detroit Diesel and then later employed by Ford Motor Company, both are companies that really support the organizations that make up Metropolitan Detroit. With Detroit Diesel for many years, it was Focus Hope. With Ford Motor Company, I became involved with Vista Maria, doing everything from gardening to painting occasionally on the service days. Paint the Town Red, my own subdivision, both as a member of the board and also as a block captain. And I'm also pleased to say that this year I am the co-chair for the National Preparedness Day event, which will be held next Saturday in Dearborn Heights.
What are we preparing for?
Well, actually, we'll get to that in a minute. Sure. Because I would like to expand on that as well, that particular event. But your education didn't stop in North Canton, though. You continued when you got back up to Michigan, right?
Correct. I actually worked my way through college. I always had a full-time day job. I worked in customer service at Georgia Pacific and went to college at night. So, which probably explains why in 1990, with a terrible recession going on at that point in history as well, I was able to find the next job up on the career ladder before I graduated, the experience and the education. So when I came to Detroit, having no family and not knowing what else to do with myself after 6 p.m. at night, I immediately rolled in a master's program and earned my my MSA in labor relations through Central Michigan University.
Okay. And then I noticed you continued your education a little bit after that. I can see it's not completely unrelated, but it seems a little bit of a different direction. Was it Madonna?
Yes, just recently, actually, within the last couple of years. As the economy took some twists and turns in the last few years, we actually at Tognum America moved our plant and our operations to South Carolina. And at one point, there was some gossip on the grapevine about moving all salaried positions. And at this point, I, you know, thought about it and decided I was not willing to move for a paycheck, that I have a very nice life here and I've put down roots and I want to stay. So I went to Madonna University and got the preparatory, you know, education to achieve a license in nursing home administration. Okay. Seems very different from what I do, but if you look at understanding finance, business, marketing, and labor relations, that is absolutely a job that combines all of those. And when I got my labor relations degree in 1996, I was actually torn whether to go for a master's in public administration or to go for labor relations.
So what do you do with this? You're a candidate for the nunnery next.
Well, right now, I actually have found it extremely useful. I do not charge for consulting services, but I have probably helped 5 to 7 friends just in the last year that had to work with various organizations to place a parent or a grandparent into assisted or long-term care. And it's a very scary thing. You want to make the right decisions. You want to know that you're doing it for the right reasons. And I'm glad to be of help that way.
Well, and I'm sure you have your reasons. And I'm thinking that one of them is the fact that the demographic throughout the entire country is shifting to an older age group. And I don't know the statistics. I don't have them in front of me. I remember reading that they said as many as half of the population will be over the age of 55 or 60. Within a not too distant future. So it seems like a business move.
I think that more than even the fact that it's the grain of America was the fact that if you think about a job that can absolutely not be outsourced to China, the answer is anything that you physically have to lay your hands on.
Right.
And that includes that level of management for direct care of individuals.
Sure, absolutely.
You don't have any children. Do you have siblings, brothers and sisters?
Yes, I actually come from a large family.
Ooh.
I have 4 sisters and a brother. And again, when we talk about why you're interested in serving or why you do the things you do, I'm actually the 4th generation of a family that has either served in public safety, being firemen or policemen, in every single generation. Now my nieces and nephews have their own careers. I have a niece that works for the sheriff's department in Florida. I have a nephew who's a firefighter who just returned from Afghanistan this week. And I have another nephew who's also a police officer in Kansas City.
You know, I know that you were nominated for city council for the open seat by Councilwoman Lisa Hicks Clayton, with its seemingly strong support from Councilwoman Janet Badlow.
I was just saying, it's her personal choice to fill, to submit your name. You don't have to be nominated.
No, but I'm just saying that there's a go ahead.
I was headed
to what they didn't. Obviously just say, well, you'd be great, you should do this.
You're talking about the vote, I see.
I was talking about she was nominated. Obviously you had to express interest. That's where I was headed.
Right. Actually, last year when we went through the situation where the budget's great and everybody has warm, fuzzy feelings in June, and in August we're talking about town hall meetings and what our priorities are because we might need to override the Headley Amendment in November, I started attending the town hall meetings, and then I wanted to just understand the charter of Dearborn Heights better and the governing of Dearborn Heights better, so I began attending the council meetings. And
well, you won't learn that there. It's the mayor's the big boss, 80% of the council.
That's pretty
20.
Much. We do follow a strong mayor.
Right.
I don't want to say weak council,
you don't
but
have to read
that
the
is
charter.
The charter that has been set up. And so then Lisa, knowing, of course, of me and recognizing me in the audience, knows me from the subdivision. And when Marge Van Houten had the opportunity to go to the judicial bench, she said, you know, this is the process for getting an appointment, and I think that you might want to submit a letter of interest. And I thought about it, and I discussed it with Janet Badlow. I discussed it with Lisa Hicks Clayton, the responsibilities, the day-to-day level of involvement, and decided that I would put my name on the table for consideration.
Do you think it's fair to say that the budget itself was one of the catalysts then?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you've had an opportunity to, just like all of us, to be able to be a part of, not to be a part of the discussion necessarily, because I know that that would be your preference, but to at least observe the procedure and the discussion. You and I spoke via email at first and then on the phone shortly after Joe Kaczynski got the required votes, and you were there. You were at the meeting. You saw that Councilwoman Badlow brought up the fact that an opinion from 1995, her interpretation was such that this spot should have been filled before the primary, which was in August, beginning of August. City Council, Corporate Counsel Gary Miyake interpreted it in a different manner. What was your take on the procedure? Did you feel that it was followed properly?
I think that the procedure was probably followed properly, although I'm disappointed that at this juncture, someone chose to change their vote and align themselves with other votes. With only four meetings left to go before the general election, the seat is barely going to be warm. So I think it's inappropriate to be able to portray yourself as an incumbent, which for most people makes it seem as though you've been there and serving the community for the entire term.
So you feel that Joe Kaczynski has an advantage based on the fact that the seat is, that he's in that seat, warming it, if you will, for these 8 or 9 weeks.
I think it could be perceived as an advantage. I think many people vote for name recognition and they vote for what they're familiar with. However, that having been said, I'm also aware that Joe's son has been very active in the community, and many people were confused as to which Mr. Kaczynski was running for office. And, you know, this will give them a clear opportunity to establish who the candidate is, and right, that it's the senior Kaczynski, not his son.
So when Councilwoman Battalo brought up that opinion, were you aware that she had done a little bit of research on that and was looking for, to me, it looked like she just wanted to be sure the procedure was followed properly.
I was unaware of exactly what the procedure would be that night in terms of conversation. I really expected that when the motion was brought up, there would be more discussion than there was. Watching it on television and sitting in the audience, it seemed like a rushed vote. I mean, aggressively, like, let's just take the vote and be done. And ordinarily, if you sit through the council meetings, there's more conversation than that on a topic.
Were you told that there was going to be a vote that day? Did you know that your name was going to be brought up as part of the process?
I was unaware that it had been brought up to the council and requested to be put back on the agenda until I received the agenda via email the previous week. I am on an email stream, so I get the detail. Well, detail is a very loose term. I get the agenda and the backup, just like any citizen can,
sure,
if they request it, the Thursday or Friday prior to.
Right.
And I opened it up because I do prepare for the meetings in advance by looking to see what the issues are, and was just very surprised to see it. I did call Lisa Hicks Clayton, said, hey, you know, what is this? And she made a phone call to Ken Barron, and he explained that Tom Barry had requested that it be put back on the agenda, and he had done so.
So after having been through the meeting, at the end of the meeting, and you saw the vote went, and Tom Barry was the one who changed his vote, like giving Mr. Kaczynski the required four, obviously that made a lot more sense, too. And I found out as well. I mean, you and I talked about this before, and I had an opportunity to talk to both Mr. Kaczynski and Tom Barry, as well as yourself, after the mm-hmm. fact. So we got everything out there, and it seemed like there were a few people that weren't, I wouldn't say confused, but there were different interpretations. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Mr. Kaczynski said, well, you know, we subscribe to these rules of order, and the bottom line is, when there's a question, this is what we follow. And, again, a lot of people said that maybe that may not have been the case. It's a lot of it's open interpreted to interpretation.
I think that any time you deal with the law, that's why we have the number of lawyers that we do in our society. You can argue either side of the case. But, you know, in this particular instance, honestly, I didn't think that they should fill the seat at this juncture, whether it would have been with myself or with Mr. Kaczynski. Because, again, I do think that it gives somewhat of a false impression.
So you were under the impression, as you had said, that it would stay open until the general election?
In the past, it always has. Okay. No one was able to tell me a time when that has been the process.
Okay. What, for
there
you now...
There have been people that have been appointed before.
Sure.
And it's been left open before, too.
Right, but if they don't appoint them in the first couple of votes and they are not able to fill the seat has been left open for as long as 9 months before. So to leave it open for another few weeks, really, which should not have been an issue of concern or a need to make sure that we had seven members.
It was at the discretion of the council chair, Ken Barron, from what I understand. And when Mr. Barry or Councilman Barry went to him and said that he changed his vote, that proved that it would be, that was how it was explained to me and why it was on the agenda, and that the procedure interpretations were basically left up to, well, okay, that was that left to the chair's discretion. So that mm-hmm. was how I was told it ended up on there. Moving forward from this point, though, You are going to run. You will be on the ballot November 6th. What are you doing right now? I think you're preparing a little differently now than you would have had you had meetings to it. You know what I mean? Had you been on council?
Actually, when you say preparing, I still attend council on Tuesdays and study sessions on the alternate Tuesdays. I try to understand everything that I can about the community and how it's run. But additionally, in terms of running a campaign, no, it hasn't really changed that much. I look for opportunities to reach out and connect with people, whether that be at a specific festival or, any kind of large gathering. But I also go talk door to door and meet with people wherever I can, you know, stop and take the time to listen. I think that's the biggest issue, and understand what their concerns are.
The absentee ballots go out very soon, no later than a couple weeks away. What will you say to people right now? What can you say? What are, I guess we'd call them guideposts, some of the things, some of the tenets that you're, on which you're standing.
Well, why select me?
Yeah, thank you.
Because of my, what is it you bring to the process that the other people may not bring in an election? That's what it's all about.
Sure. And, you know, my guideposts are, you know, to be fair, firm, and fiscally responsible. I think that, again, the catalyst for me attending the meetings and becoming more involved was the budgetary process. I do bring a very strong financial background to the position. In 2011, on behalf of my employer, I led a team of people who compiled the data and petitioned the state for what is called a mega tax incentive. So I am very familiar with tax incentives. Because we were able to retain over 240 jobs in the state of Michigan and add another 115, we were able to get from the state $7.5 million in tax abatements for a five-year period. That makes the state of Michigan and any community that houses us very, you know, very attractive to the organization. There are things that you have to do when you appeal to the state for tax money. And one of those is that you have to go to the municipalities where you will be located as an enterprise and ask for what they call 328 or 198 tax abatements on personal property. The individual community has to say, I will support you as a company to go after this state money. And in order to do that, I had to meet with Brownstown, Canton Township, Van Buren Township, Farmington Hills, because we weren't sure where we were going to build. And so having been through that procedure and having negotiated it successfully, I bring a very strong financial background in the property tax abatement and in the tax incentives, as well as just understanding finances. We do have labor contracts coming up in 2013. Again, I do have a master's degree in labor relations, which I do think helps me interpret them and look at them in a different way.
So you bring a very strong business background. And I think that from my experience at the meetings, and I, like you, I go regularly for whatever capacity I am in media. And it's really interesting because this is the level where things happen. I think you guys will both agree that local government, this is where things can change literally overnight. And, you know, and in all fairness, Mr. Kaczynski has quite a background in regard to being on council as well. I don't know, as far as the business goes, I mean, I have an opportunity to see your resume here, and it's very strong. I don't want to say what changes would you make. You could still make amendments to the budget. It's not, I mean, because it passed, there still are things within acceptable or reasonable levels that can still be changed.
Right. In fact, at the last study session, Tom Barry said that he wanted to lay off 9 police officers in order to close a budgetary gap of approximately $700,000. And that's an easy solution, but you can't cut your way to prosperity. And I think that at the town hall meetings, people were quite clear in 2011 that police and fire are their primary concerns. So those would be the last items that I would look at to cut from the community. But beyond that, there's also a contract that says we must have this many officers in order to safely back each other up and to perform the duties of the department. And I believe the number in Dearborn Heights is 51. So without looking at that contract, do we know if 9 takes us below 51? Just previous to that, the chief of police, Lee Gavin, had said that he had some gentlemen off on medical, and that was the reason for some overtime that was unexpected. Well, if you have people on medical, how does that affect the contract? And are they still considered active for the purposes of counting those 51 officers? And you have to understand how to read a contract and how to negotiate all that. Otherwise, you know, you can make some grandiose gestures, and you can, talk till till tomorrow, but it's not going to change because it's not going to happen due to the contract.
We're talking to Lisa Ferens, candidate for Dearborn Heights City Council. We'll be on the general ballot November 6th. This is Dearborn Heights News and Views with Netta Piggy, and I'm Dennis Reimers. Is there a website or someplace people can go for more information, or is there any way that they can communicate with you?
Absolutely. My email is L, like Lisa, Ferens, F like in Frank, ARRENS, at peoplepc.com. And you can also reach me. I have a page for the campaign at Lisa Ferens for Dearborn Heights Council on Facebook.
Is that .com?
No, it's on Facebook.
Oh, Facebook. Oh, sorry. Thank you so much for joining us today. Obviously, there's a little bit of time left before the exciting. I think it's exciting. I'm sure you do too, because you're an active part of it. No matter what happens, though, you still have a very strong interest in your community and your local government. And like I said, you bring a lot of business, a strong business background to the table.
Thank you. I've been very fortunate in the course of my 25-year career. I have literally had the opportunity to travel around the world. But my roots are in Dearborn Heights, and I think it is a city with a lot of promise, and I'd like to be part of that.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck.
Thank you.
And you can re-listen to these archive programs on the Internet, on your computer, by selecting WHFR.FM. To get to our site, select the talk show button and select today's date, which is September the 10th, and you can re-listen to Lisa's comments about herself, which indeed are impressive.
This is airing on September the 11th,
so that's right.
The forum date.
It's September 11th. Today is the 10th.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
This has been Dearborn Heights News and Views for Tuesday, September 11th, 2012. Join us on October 9th from 1 to 2 p.m. for our next show. From Netapigian, I'm Dennis Reimers. Thank you for listening.
WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.